This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a Philadelphia courtroom, a father told his daughter, who was about to testify in a murder trial, "Say what I told you to say. I don't remember." Last month in Pittsburgh, a witness appeared in court wearing a black T-shirt with a red stop sign on the front. The message, "Stop snitching." 2 years ago in Baltimore, a homemade DVD celebrated the Stop Snitching campaign. Police and prosecutors describe what they call the Baltimore Triangle. Today's witness is tomorrow's victim and maybe the next day's perpetrator. Last year, the governor of Maryland signed a law that made witness intimidation a felony that carries a possible 20-year prison sentence. Some attribute the problem to a criminal justice system that can't protect witnesses before, during, or after trial. Others point to racial and cultural issues. Many African Americans believe there are already too many black men in prison and resent the deals that informers sometimes receive in exchange for testimony. And a few rap stars have glamorized the issue by refusing to identify gunmen who shot them or their friends. Later on in the program, movie director Deepa Mehta joins us to talk about her new movie, Water, and the extraordinary effort it took to make it. But first, witness intimidation. If you have questions about what's happening and why, give us a call. We'd especially like to hear from members of the law enforcement community. Have witnesses refused to come forward because they fear retaliation? 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. And we begin in Philadelphia, where Mitch Lipka joins us. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here, Neil.
You were in the courtroom in Philadelphia in March when Devonzo Lawson told his daughter to say, "I don't know," on the witness stand. Tell us, what did you see? What happened?
Well, he was there were only three people in the courtroom other than the participants that day. The trial wasn't supposed to start. So his daughter, Tanisha Wiggins, was a key witness in the trial, and she would have been with the prosecution just that morning practicing her testimony, and they expected her to go on and be a great witness. And the father, who had not been a participant in this whatsoever, is in the courtroom with her, and she goes to take the stand. She's really reluctant to even take the oath, tells the judge she doesn't want to testify. She finally convinces Tanisha to take the oath, and then she says, "I want to talk to my dad." And the judge says, "Okay," and the father comes out from behind me, goes into the area where the lawyers are, and right behind where the prosecutors sit, and about 3 or 4 feet in front of me, he tells her the words that you just used at the beginning, "Say what I told you to say, I don't remember." And then they continue to have a few more words that I didn't catch, but it was a whisper that was, you know, loud enough to be clearly heard a few feet away.
And what did the daughter then say in her testimony?
"I don't remember," to virtually every question over about a two-hour period, even though this was clearly, a remarkable event in her life, where a 10-year-old boy is killed standing outside of his school in a shooting between two gangs that had been hunting each other. Like one of the most tragic kinds of killings you'd ever hear about, and somehow suddenly all the circumstances became "I don't remember."
Mm-hmm. Now, what has happened since? By the way, what happened in the trial?
The two men who were on trial in that killing were both convicted, despite six of the witnesses, including Tanisha, not testifying to what they had earlier told police.
Now, after this this incident in court, prosecutors thought about charging Devonzo Lawson, and first they said, well, maybe he's just trying to protect his daughter. Then, as this story got around, some other people got pretty excited about it.
Yeah, it seemed that, you know, the day of, they kind of wrote it off, and as I think the higher ups in the food chain started thinking about it, it was too obvious to not do something about it. It was in court, it was blatant, it was on the front page of the paper, and then they actually ended up last week arresting him and charging him with trying to get her to perjure herself and intimidating a witness.
Things that could get him over 30 years in prison if he served the full time.
Yeah, if they added it all up and he was convicted of everything, it's a long time in prison. And he's been locked up since they charged him with a parole violation from a prior drug conviction. And so he's been in jail ever since.
And has he said anything about why he said what he said?
He hasn't, and it's kind of hard for him to do that right now in that he's in a lockup.
What about Tanisha Wiggins? Is she going to be charged with perjury?
As of now, they've not said if they're going to do anything with Tanisha. It's, you know, she... It's awfully hard, I would think, to prosecute somebody for perjury when their answer is, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. You have to prove that, you know, she really did remember.
Now, there was another case recently in Philadelphia that also involved witness intimidation. Dante Thomas, prosecutors say, shot and killed a man who had cooperated with police.
Yeah, his Dante Thomas is accused of killing Tyrese Gaiman Allen, who had been actually shot himself when his cousin was killed. And he came forward and identified the shooter of his cousin, and then himself, you know, found himself on the other end of it, and was killed. And it's one of those cases that actually shows that there is a real penalty for people to come forward. And in that case, you know, Tyrese had been shot twice, and then finally the second time killed when he said he would testify.
Mitch Lipka, thanks very much. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Mitch Lipka is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he spoke to us from his office there in Philadelphia. Well, joining us now is Rayko Saunders, a professional boxer these days. Earlier in his life, he served a 4-year prison term for dealing drugs. He supports the Stop Snitching campaign. He's with us now by phone from Vero Beach in Florida. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. Tell us, what is the Stop Snitching movement all about?
Well, the first thing, let me correct you on, I didn't do 4 years for selling drugs. I actually did 4 years because I was convicted of aggravated assault on a police officer, which the assault never happened. The things they accused me of never even took place. I was actually assaulted and sent to prison to cover it up.
Well, thanks for that correction. But on to the Stop Snitching campaign. What is that all about?
Well, the Stop Snitching campaign is about these informants that are working for the police, but are out here doing more crime than what you would call a criminal. You know, these guys are actually the criminals, and they're allowed, you know, being allowed to do whatever it is that they want to do because they're providing just a little bit of information on the smaller guy. Mm-hmm. You know, So that's what that's about.
So these confidential informants tell the police a little bit, and in return for that, you say they go around and act as if they're utterly immune from the law.
Well, they are immune. The police, you know, allow these dudes to do whatever it is that they want to do because they're supplying them with, we can say, a constant arrest. You know, even though they may be small, you know, they're supplying them with constant arrests. So they're allowing these guys to do whatever it is they want to do, and these guys are the guys that are perpetrating the major crime, shooting people, you know, selling the most drugs, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Now, as I understand it, you wore a Stop Snitching T-shirt to court in Pittsburgh in a case where you were a witness?
Well, actually, I was not a witness. I was actually the victim. Some guys were plotting to kill me or put a hit out on me or whatever it may have been, and I was actually a victim. The prosecutors and the police never even notified me when the trial was, so I actually found out myself, and yeah, I went.
Mm-hmm. And what happened when you showed up wearing a Stop Snitching T-shirt? All people in that case, you would seem to have a motive to tell he's the guy who did it, put him away, please.
Well, I was never concerned about these guys because they're clowns, actually. I wore the Stop Snitching T-shirt. The guy, one of the main perpetrators that supplied the assault weapon, showed these guys where I lived at and basically put the whole thing together. He turned state evidence against the alleged shooters, mm-hmm. Et cetera, and the alleged shooters and the alleged guy to pay for the hit. He was the main guy in the case. He got caught with the assault weapon, et cetera, but he was allowed to turn state evidence and they charged him with criminal mischief. How do you get charged with criminal mischief when you get caught with an banned assault weapon at that? You're a convicted felon. You've been caught with 3-4 guns, caught with, you know, 3, 6, 7 times with drugs. Come on, man.
So, in a way, what you're saying is the criminal justice system, be damned. I'm going to take care of this myself.
Well, my thing is, you know, me, myself, personally, you know, I'm a man, and that's what men do, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I would never go to, you know, the criminal system. The criminal system or the justice system is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Justice system has never been for me. I've served 4 years in prison for being shot at. You know, police tried to assassinate me twice.
Well,
I was the one shot at and did 4 years in prison. So, you know, I would never go to the justice system.
Well, what about the case of this 10-year-old kid in Philadelphia? He's caught in the crossfire to gangs shooting it out. 10-year-old kid is murdered. Should people come forward and tell the police who did that?
Well, in that case, you know, I sympathize with this little young guy. You know, I think that's a bad situation. And yeah, I always say that if you are a law-abiding citizen and that is your outlet to, you know, go to the police, then I'm all for that. You know, you should go to the police. And if it was a case that if my son, I have a 12-year-old and a 10-month-old, if my son was hurt and that's the, you know, the perfect lifestyle that I live and I was a law, you know, 100% law-abiding citizen, et cetera, you know, and I would want somebody to come forward and help me. Absolutely.
But if you're not in that situation, and obviously a professional boxer, you're a man who can take care of himself, then leave the cops out of it.
Well, my thing is, I've been in prison. I've been in prison. I experienced it. If somebody was to hurt my child, I don't want this guy to go to prison where he served 3 hot meals a day. He gets to sleep, you know, gets good sleep and gets to watch cable and prison movies and play prison games, et cetera. Not at all.
Reiko Saunders, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Reiko Saunders joined us by phone from Vero Beach in Florida. When we come back, more about the Stop Snitching campaign and the effect it's had on law enforcement in cities around the country. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A campaign underway in some American cities is telling people who witness crimes to not step forward. You can now find T-shirts, CDs, DVDs, and hats promoting a Stop Snitching tagline. The trend worries police and prosecutors for obvious reasons. Witness testimony is crucial to many criminal cases. If you'd like to join our conversation, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And joining us now is Peter Moskos, an assistant professor of law and police science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. For 2 years, he was a police officer in the city of Baltimore, which has been described as the epicenter of the Stop Snitching movement. Peter Moskos joins us now from our bureau in New York. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Is snitching, we were just hearing that description from Reiko Saunders, is snitching like that? Some guy gets caught with a weapon and flips on his colleagues. Isn't that typical?
There are really two basic kinds of snitching. One is what Reiko Saunders was talking about, those who are in the game, those who get caught, those who want to get off and cut a deal with prosecutors or police. The other kind, which is what Mitch Lipko was talking about, is when someone, an innocent kid, is shot and killed on the street and no one's willing to talk. So those aren't quite the same story. Of course, there's a lot more sympathy for innocent victims, to be honest, than for drug dealers who mm-hmm. rat out their friends.
Yeah, I could understand that. But aren't both types of snitches pretty important to law enforcement?
Well, without a willing witness testimony, you're never going to get convictions, especially in drug crimes, because that's when you don't have a typical victim with you. When you have assault, you've got a victim. But so you need these. I mean, you can call them rats or snitches or confidential informants, but, you know, they're cooperative witnesses. And when they don't talk, nothing happens in court.
Mm-hmm. And is there an identifiable trend of more and more people declining to testify, declining to come forward?
I honestly don't think so. I think this culture has been there. I mean, it's been part of the gangsta and thug culture for decades. And it has its roots in mob culture. I mean, it's very similar to the omerta and the code of silence you get in the mafia. So, and rappers, you know that, and they name themselves after Gotti and things like that. I think what's new is the Stop Snitching video DVD that came out in 2004, I believe,
right,
that brought it to the attention of mainstream society. But it's there's nothing new going on in the ghetto.
All right, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Robert. Robert calling us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I got two issues that I would like to touch on. First off, I'm an ex-housing officer. Second of all, is that the police hold a higher code than anyone when it comes to snitching. There are codes where officers are not allowed to snitch on other officers when they see things that are totally against the law. And if you do, you are considered an outcast. I have many of friends that have been shot in incidents because they snitched on an officer, and other officers just wouldn't come to their defense. Now, I'm not with the stop snitching, but that stop snitching thing falls in many different areas. Like, if it comes to a child getting shot or hurt, oh, of course, I'm going to step up and speak my mind. And I'm going to say what needs to be said in defense of that child, if it's mine or someone else's. Now, if it comes to a drug dealer, people are scared to step up because they know if you step up and you say something in a court of law to an effect that will put one of these gang members or drug dealers in jail, his friends are going to go after you. It's a known fact.
Yep. A couple of interesting points that Peter Moskos, as Robert's brought up. Let's take them in reverse order. He says people are scared. It looks like people are scared.
Well, and sometimes there's good reason to be scared. I mean, it's a shame because it often is communities held hostage by very few people. If everyone snitched, if everyone talks, there's really not much that the bad guys could do. But on an individual level, there is a risk. And, I mean, police officers know that. I mean, typically after a shooting, you do what's called a neighborhood canvas, which is a fancy way of just saying you knock on doors and say, you know, did you see or hear anything?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is always no. And you're somewhat sympathetic because you are going to go home at the end of that shift and they have to live there. So, and then, you know, the witnesses do get hurt. Unfortunately, it's not unheard of.
Mm-hmm. And the other point.
Yes, they do. And I'm a witness to some things I can't say by court of law was the hush thing. But I was shot twice, and my partner did not come to my defense because I said something that brought to him under a microscope, and that's the reason why I'm in Columbus, Ohio today. I gave up my badge, I gave up my gun, and walked away from putting my family in potential danger.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you thought
I had to walk away from my children, my family, and my friends because being an officer, snitching on another blue shirt, is a big crime there in the city of Philadelphia.
Right.
Now, some people don't want to realize this, but it is. It's all over. If you say something or see something and you go to the authorities and say, well, I've seen this man shoot this man, and the first thing they do is media seriously will blog your name all over it. Well, this Robert or such and such seen this case, and it puts that person in their home, their family, their vehicle, anybody that's near them in a lot of danger.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are hushing, keeping it quiet, you know, afraid to speak out. And that's not right. You know, speak out, say what you need to say, but yet tell the prosecutor, tell the judge, tell whoever. Make sure that you're protected because you're doing them a civil favor.
Mm-hmm. Robert's point is a good one, Peter Moskos. There is a view, I'm saying it's the majority view or the right view, but there is a view of the cops as being just the biggest gang in the street, and they don't rat on each other.
Yes,
yeah, that's an overblown view. I mean, the blue wall of silence that is known, I mean, it's a phenomenon, but it's overrated. Cops do actually rat each other out. You also have to, I mean, stop snitching, the code is silent. You have to ask, would you rat out your family members, your co-workers? I mean, it's not just in the ghetto, it's not just among police that people don't want to turn in their friends and family. I mean, that's called honesty and loyalty. They're not altogether bad qualities. The only point is, where do we draw the line?
Mm-hmm. Robert, it sounds like you've had to make some serious sacrifices to sustain your position. Very interesting of you to call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Dave. Dave's with us from Sacramento.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually a former narcotics prosecutor, and now I prosecute sexual assault and domestic violence cases. But, you know, my comment is regarding the value of confidential informants. You know, without CIs, we as prosecutors can't get search warrants to go in dope dealers' houses and to to help try and clean up neighborhoods. And we do have oftentimes real serious difficulty in getting witnesses to come forward in gang cases. It's those are some of the most difficult cases out there. You know, with respect to what the individual said earlier about stop snitching, the complaint seems to me more appropriately directed toward toward the DA, because if the cases of the snitches aren't being dealt with appropriately, then that falls to the DA, and your DA is your elected official, so vote with your feet.
One thing, Dave, let me ask you about, and this has been raised in several states on the East Coast. I wonder what the situation is there in California, that if state agencies had a better witness protection program, maybe they could get more witnesses to cooperate.
You know, I don't doubt that that's probably true, but as is the case with many agencies, find me the money. I'd be happy to offer witness protection to many of the people, and particularly people in my domestic violence cases who are trying to escape a violent environment. But they know that they're hooked in enough that they just they can't get out of these situations.
Is it
witness protection has its limits, and most people don't want it because you have to move. I mean, you have your neighborhood, your friends, your child care arrangements, so it's usually not an option for most people.
Absolutely.
And, Dave, I assume it's also sometimes difficult to get testimony in domestic abuse cases as well, and for pretty much the same reason, fear of retaliation.
About 80 to 90% of victims in domestic violence cases and sexual assault cases will do what's called a recantation at some point. They'll give an initial statement to the police officers, and then by the time they come to court, the cycle of domestic violence has reached the point where the defendant has apologized. You know, they realize that this is the person who's the caretaker of my children, and I really can't be testifying against this person because he could potentially go away to prison. He could be on felony probation. He'll have difficulty now getting a job. So, you know, it seems to me that, and this is from some victims' perspectives, not all, but some, that, you know, that now's not a good time for me to be, you know, biting the hand that feeds me, essentially. And it's a horrible, sad situation.
Thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And good luck. Let's go now to, this is Nash, and Nash is calling us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and coming from a white middle-class background, I had absolutely no experience with this no-snitching campaign. But as I started to teach, I began noticing kind of a trend amongst my students. And one day we were giving a lesson on exactly this issue, and they were, you know, informing me that this is something that's often talked about in rap lyrics. And it's sort of a problem that I see perpetuating itself in my school system. The students, unless they're given some sort of financial contribution or offered some sort of financial incentive, won't come forward, and they don't feel culpable at all when they're the witness to a crime for not coming forward. Hmm. And so it's kind of creating this cycle of violence, I think, within our community because, you know, here are these rap artists who, you know, are obviously held up as some sort of, you know, symbol of admiration amongst a lot of my students. And they're, again, perpetuating this idea of not snitching.
Yeah, even Peter Moskos in situations where either they themselves or their friends or bodyguards have been shot.
Well, people think that testifying is optional, and I see that among my students at John Jay College, and these are New York City kids and smart college students, and people often think that you can plead the Fifth Amendment. You can't. That's the right to protect yourself against self-incrimination. If you witness a felony crime, you can't choose whether to testify or not. You have to.
You have to. It's legally your responsibility.
If you are subpoenaed for court, but if you're an important witness for a felony crime and you get the court order, you can't just say, I don't want to go.
Otherwise, I can see a moral obligation, but not necessarily a legal one.
Well, once you're subpoenaed, it becomes legal.
Once you're subpoenaed, it becomes legal.
What about that moral obligation? Like, that's what I can't teach my students, is that, you know, morally there is an obligation. And regardless of whether or not anybody ever knows that you've witnessed this crime, if you don't come forward, if you don't help the victim,
and there's hypocrisy in the hip-hop community, too, because, I mean, there's the common belief that police don't care about hip-hop murders. You know, I want to know who killed Jam Master Jay as well as the next guy. But no one's going to know because no one's going to snitch. I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, why aren't our crimes being solved, and don't cooperate with police and prosecutors.
Nash, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Peter Moskos. He's an assistant professor of law and police science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City, a former Baltimore City police officer. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And I wonder, Peter, as a Baltimore cop, you must have gone on a lot of those canvassing operations yourself. What did you find that people told you when you knocked on their door and said, did you see what happened down the street?
They'd say no. And so, I mean, sometimes I worked midnight shift, so often it was true because it would be at 3 a.m. But you also would get looks occasionally, which is no. And, I mean, you know as well as I that if I did, I wouldn't tell you anyway.
There was a tragic incident in Baltimore a couple of years ago, a woman who had snitched on some drug dealers across the street because she thought they were endangering her children. Her house was burned down. She and five of her children died in that fire.
It's the Dawson family. That was my beat. A friend of mine handled that case.
And that was extraordinary because so few people would then come forward and say, who torched the house?
And it was a shame. It was interesting because the crime, I was no longer a police officer then, but the crime happened on the midnight shift. That wasn't even a particularly active drug corner, so it wasn't, we didn't know he was snitching at least. I don't know if it was different during the day or not. But it just, it shows, I mean, the problems that run so deep. And it wasn't so much that he was, you know, snitching in court. He was just, he wanted crack dealers off his block.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is George in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, George. Go ahead, please.
Hey, my point. I guess someone stole my point while I was waiting.
I'm sorry about that, George.
I'd always thought, I grew up in Cleveland, and I always thought that we considered a snitch criminals who told on one another. We didn't actually consider it, just regular citizens going in and testifying, because that always made the community better. At least that's the way we felt about it.
Well, Rayko Saunders, with whom we spoke earlier, seemed to make that distinction, too. He was talking about confidential informers as snitches, the kind of people who either get a lighter sentence for turning on their friends or in fact, stay on the street by providing police with a steady flow of information.
But if anything, the Stop Snitching movement now it is trying to extend into the other category. I mean, yeah, the call is absolutely right. You have to snitch against somebody. Those are all people in the game, and, you know, if they have their own code, that's one thing. But it is when innocent people are shot and killed where we really have to sort of crack down and make sure that the rule of law prevails.
George, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
After that video came out a couple of years ago in Baltimore, the police department put together their own DVD, designed their own T-shirts to counter the Stop Snitching campaign that said, keep talking. Often it seems that police departments, when they try to do this, it's a little ham-fisted. Has that been
effective? The production value wasn't that much higher than the Stop Snitching DVD.
Yeah. So in their efforts to combat this, what can police departments, prosecutors do?
Well, one thing they can do, which is what they did, they arrested the people in the video. I mean, that's for starters, because if the people flashing guns and drugs in the video walk free, then, I mean, that sort of makes a shambles of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they did go and lock them up. And just a couple of weeks ago, they locked up Skinny Shug himself, Ronnie Thomas, the guy who made the DVD, which is only a shame because he was working on Volume 8 of his series, which I was sort of looking forward to. But so they got him on various counts, and he's been arrested before for drugs and handgun possession. So you can certainly start on that. And I think, though, it's not very popular. I think to some extent you have to crack down on hip-hop artists when they make a point, when they don't see something, the Little Kims and the 50 Cents. I mean, again, you have to get the idea that this is not, you can't choose not to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, the court system doesn't have much of a carrot to draw people in. There's no, except for doing the right thing, there's no good reason to go to court. No one really wins in court, so all they really have is a stick. So they gotta use it occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lil Kim is in prison, I think, as we speak. But what about that case in Philadelphia? A father is trying to. Well, we don't know exactly what his motive is, but it could be that he's trying to protect his daughter from retaliation. Five other witnesses didn't testify in that case either. He says, "Just say you don't know."
That's the attitude. I mean, that father's no angel. I mean, he might be trying to protect his daughter, but he's trying to protect himself. I mean, again, no one wants to go to court. Victims don't. Criminals certainly don't. I mean, the only people that want to go to court are police officers because we get paid time and a half for it.
We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, more on the problem of witness intimidation and the Stop Snitching campaign. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Also, director Deepa Mehta will join us to talk about her new movie, Water. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few minutes, director Deepa Mehta will join us to talk about making the new movie Water. But first, Stop Snitching. A new campaign tells witnesses not to speak up. Police departments worry that witness intimidation will hurt their cases. Our guest is Peter Moskos, an assistant professor of law and police science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. For 2 years, he was a police officer in Baltimore City in Maryland. And if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email is talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is...
If I could say it, Neil, it's interesting when you mention the news headlines, because on this day when people are marching and celebrating American society and protesting for inclusion into America, I mean, the Stop Snitching movement is essentially a movement about exclusion.
Anyway, let's get another caller on the line. This is Sadiqa. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Tallahassee.
Hi, it's actually pronounced Sadiqa.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I just wanted to say that the stop snitching point is there. Actually, there's a bigger perspective. What it is it's not only rap. It's actually rap. It's the Godfather videos. It's the Alcatraz movies. All of the media glorifies this gangster type mentality, this gangster type atmosphere. So now you have kids who live in the suburbs and urban areas who want to be gangsters, and they want to sell drugs, or they want to do this and they want to do that, and then when the law come on them and the heat is really, really on them, then all of a sudden, that's when they want to snitch. It's not real gangsters, if you will. It's not real gangsters snitching. It's people who shouldn't even be in this type of environment. Like, that's not them. They're putting on a front. That's who's really doing all of the snitching, and that's, I think, why it started to become a fad.
Mm-hmm.
Just like clogs or the afro. It's just really just a fad that's going on today. And I really appreciate you, Neil, for having this show. Mm-hmm. First of all, I like your show, period, but especially this one. Because
oh.
I am the hip-hop community. I really am the hip-hop community, and I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate bringing up the fact that the cops do the same thing. It's not the hip-hop community at all.
Mm-hmm.
The cops do the same exact thing.
What about her point, Peter Moskos? I mean, certainly, you know, whether it's faddish or not, it's happening.
It is happening, and it's a fad. It probably lasts longer than afros and clogs. But it's there's also, even in the hip hop community, there's a split primarily between the old school and then when gangster rap split off from it. So this is sort of, I mean, this is the gangster rap side of it, a Tupac Shakur element.
Actually, there's a difference between gangster rap and corporate rap. And what we're seeing on MTV and BET and what's being given our children every day, all day, and heavy rotation, that's corporate rap.
Mm-hmm.
People don't really live like that for real, for real. And that's what I'm saying. The so-called rappers who are on the radio saying that they kill and they steal, and these people come from the suburbs. They don't know what the ghetto is, and that's why they rap in the way that they are. That's why they're, quote, exposing themselves, because they're not really gangsters. Real gangsters are undercover, like for real, for real.
Yeah.
Jay-Z said it best when he said, you'll always be in jail, just minus the bars. So they'll get their due in snitching on their so-called friends. They'll get their due.
Mm-hmm. It may be a wannabe phenomenon, but nevertheless, it seems to be happening. Certainly where you were in Baltimore, Peter Moskos, that's not the suburbs of anywhere.
No,
and it's certainly. I mean, it's life imitates art, and art imitates life. I mean, they were talking about Code of Silence on The Sopranos last night, so it certainly is out there in American culture, and it's not all just coming from our ghettos.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting because at some level, it's a very fundamentally conservative movement. On the actual Stop Snitching DVD, one of the guys, and the caller's right, there's a lot of posturing on it, but he uses the line that, you know, do the crime, do the time. There's no talk about, you know, light sentences or, you know, and redoing our drug policy and things like that we probably should do. It's basically saying, hey, this is the game. You did the crime, then take your punishment. It's very conservative.
yet, on the other hand, it's extremely corrosive of society at large.
Yes.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's, what your previous guest said about, you know, if someone hurt his family, he thinks prison's too soft. Again, a very sort of conservative philosophy that the punishment needs to be harsher. People don't trust the criminal justice system.
Well, self-administered punishment, which I wouldn't identify with conservatives necessarily. Sadiqua, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all have a happy day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And Peter Moskos, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Peter Moskos, Assistant Professor of Law and Police Science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, with us from our bureau in New York. Coming up, water.